Why is it that some people experience a haunting and others do not? Why is it that some people are sensitive their entire lives to these things and are able to experience them in very vivid fashion, and others not at all? Or for some, just in small spurts, only seemingly when a ghost or a spirit wants to be seen, can they choose to appear to certain people? And then the bigger question is, folks who have had those experiences and will recount them as clear as day, why do they sometimes look back at that and go, yeah, but it was probably just, insert the something in the blank here, that they try to logically make sense of an experience that otherwise is, you know, unexplainable or very hard to grasp? These are questions I wonder about, because we hear all different ghost stories, every shape, size imaginable. In today's EPP bonus episode, EPP episode 291 of Real Ghost Stories Online, is no different. We hear about a story of late one night where a teenager witnesses a shocking scene, a scene of murder, from an upstairs window of an old farmhouse. It's a scene straight out of hell. And once you hear about what is going on, you will fully understand what I mean. I'm not being overdramatic. It is a scene straight out of hell. And they witness this as children, and they try and make sense of it as adults. Also, a wild young man finds himself mixed up with the wrong people. It tends to happen when that's the way people are describing you. The people, however, put their selfish desires in front of the value of his own life, leaving his soul to wander the earth, searching for answers after he's killed. And a family finds the wreckage of an old home, off by itself, but what they discover inside that house is far more than just peeling wallpaper and rotting lumber. They discover the history and the inhabitants, some of the folks who called that place home. We get all those stories and more. Very interesting episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Like I said, EPP episode number 291. My name is Tony Brewski. Stay with us. Childhood imagination, it's something that we have to take into account when we're looking at ghost stories, especially ones from a distant past, and we're trying to pull those memories into the current and identify what is fact and what is fiction. Sometimes when you're trying to identify a ghost story or a paranormal experience, it can be very difficult, through the lens of adulthood, to look at moments that we experienced or we believe we experienced and be able to say, yes, this is a fact. This happened. This is not a figment of my imagination. Why? Because sometimes those experiences and those moments are so outlandish, so outrageous, so fantastical that they couldn't possibly be real. Right? That's at least what we want to believe, because sometimes the fact that these moments actually did occur are far scarier to process than just accepting it as being a figment of imagination, of a childhood thought process gone awry. In our next story, we hear about one of those moments. But someone looking back at a very fateful night and a moment they will never forget, looking out the window at the top floor of the farmhouse they grew up in, and what they saw going on in the backyard is nothing short of a front seat view into hell. Take a listen. I was going on 5 or 6 years old. It was hot that summer. So hot it almost felt like the fires of hell were heating the outside. I was at my great uncle and great aunt's farm. I loved going to that farm and went as often as I could. The farm was in Convoy, just outside of Van Wert, Ohio. Good luck finding that on a map. The house was a small two-story farmhouse with a concrete front porch that was the length of the front room. The old screen door in summer was the only door closed. It was metal and squeaked every time it was opened, almost like a poor man alarm system. If someone came in that door, you knew, no matter where you were in that house. The door opened into the living, where a larger one of two TVs was. To the left was the doorway to the dining room. The dining room and kitchen were separated by a bar, where the second and smaller TV was. The dining room was home to a large wooden rectangular table. It was only used on holidays. The kitchen was smaller, round wooden table that was used every day for breakfast and dinner. Lunch was usually served at the bar, but sometimes at the table. To the right of the living was my great uncle Bill's and great aunt Sue's chair, which sat directly across from the wooden console TV. Behind the chairs was another door that led to a long, narrow bathroom. To the left, if the bathroom door was the door to my aunt and uncle's bedroom. And to the left of that door was the upstairs door, which led to my cousin's bedroom. There were two rooms upstairs. The stairs opened into the first, which the loft type of room was at. This is the room my cousin used most and had his bed in. Just past his bed was another door that led to another bedroom. This room was never used. I could tell you that it was too hot in the summer, which it was, and I could tell you about the wasp nest in the back room, which there was, as to why we never went in there, but to be honest, the room never felt right. Obviously, I didn't spend much time in there, and strange places to little kids never do feel right, but that room just felt wrong. Though as far as I know, nothing ever happened in that room. Under the stairwell was a closet that sat in a little hallway off the living room. In that closet was a rollaway bed that I and my cousin used during the summer nights. That hallway led to another room and had a doorway that led into the kitchen on the end, and another that led into my aunt's and uncle's bedroom. In that room was a couch that sat under a set of windows. Those windows were the ones I would look through to see the true horror for the very first time. At 5 years old, I was a short, skinny thing with a mop of brown hair on top of my head. I hadn't started watching anything truly scary yet, and I was a little over a year away from the first time I watched The Exorcist. My aunt and uncle always made me feel welcome. I was treated more like a child of theirs than that of a grand nephew, and no more so than by Sarah. Sarah was a Doberman Pinscher who was named after my mother, and she acted like my mother as well. She was one, if two, dogs and my favorite. Whenever I was outside, Sarah was by my side. We played and I roamed the farm as if I went where I wasn't supposed to go. Sarah would bark and let me know. If I was outside, she was by my side. They had another dog. It was short, curly, blonde-haired, ankle-biter named Princess. While Sarah was an outside-only dog, the Princess was in and out. Princess was a hunter. She'd constantly bring all kinds of small animals to the porch. After a day of transporting dead birds, rats, and mice, she'd get up on the couch next to you and try to lick your face off. This day, I do not like dogs licking my face. This was a time before cell phones and 24-hour TV. A time when kids stayed outside all day. When I was there, I'd get up early, not my choice, eat breakfast, watch the old Spider-Man cartoon while my aunt cleaned the kitchen. All this happened before the sun rose. My uncle and cousins would go to start chores, and after the kitchen was clean, as if they were running low, my aunt would take me out back to the chicken coop to gather eggs. The morning before that nightmare, we gathered enough for a whole week. There was a back door at the back of the kitchen that led to the back porch that was more of a go-through room, meaning it was a room we would go through to get outside. They used it to store all sorts of junk, but to me it was just a go-through to the backyard. We didn't use that back door much in the summer because there was another wasp nest nearby. To the left of the house was a small apple orchard that I played in infrequently. The only other thing that stands out about that summer was the fleas. They had bad fleas, and this was before foggers, so the battle was long and hard. On that day, nothing out of the ordinary happened. We had dinner. I and my cousin set up the rollaway bed, and by 10 p.m., we were in bed sleeping. That night was hot, and I remember even having a sheet felt like it was too much. I woke up, at least I think I did, sometime in the early morning. It was still dark, and I swore I heard a noise, a clunk sound. I got up and peered out back where the noise originated, and what I saw chilled me to the bone. My back where the creek ran behind the house was a line of women in white robes. The line wrapped around the house and out of view. At the head of the line, a woman with dark, raven-like hair stood before a large tree stump. Standing behind the stump was a man in dark trousers, no shirt, a black hood, and what I would later come to know as an executioner's hood, and he glowed with a red light. Although it was dark, the women had a blue glow that surrounded them. The woman knelt by the stump, bent over, and laid her head on the stump. The man then raised an axe and swiftly brought the axe down and severed the woman's head. Her head and body disappeared, and the next in line stepped forward. A woman after woman stepped up and had their heads removed as I knelt on the couch and watched through the window. The next woman had long, curly, blonde hair that hung around a round face. As she laid her head on the stump, she faced me and raised a finger to her lips as to warn me to stay quiet before her head was severed as she disappeared. The man slowly raised his head and turned his gaze towards me. I ducked quickly to hide from him, hoping he didn't see me. That is where we're going to pause our EPP bonus episode preview of Real Ghost Stories Online. To hear how this story concludes, well, help support our program and keep us on the air. Become what we call an extra podcast person of Real Ghost Stories Online at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. In exchange for the support, you'll get all 291 bonus episodes in their entirety, years and years and years of episodes to binge away upon. You also get access to our regular program weeks in advance before the rest of the public hears it. Also commercial free too. You also get a free e-copy of our Amazon best-selling book, Real Ghost Stories, Haunting Encounters Told by Real People. You also get the audiobook copy of that as well. Both available, by the way, on Amazon and Audible, about 15 bucks a pop. $5 is what you get that for. And all the other stuff I just talked about too, when you become an extra podcast person, an EPP. Do it at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Real Ghost Stories Online, I'm Tony Brisky. Thank you for your support.